And a high fly ball hit to deep center field. Looking up is Newt Barr. This is long gone. A monster shot by Ian Happ. Five home runs on the day for the Cubs. And it's now a 7-3 lead over St. Louis. For Happ, that is home run number 15.
We're back live with more Anthony Herron on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Final hour coming at you here on Chicago Sports Radio. 670 The Score. Focus has been on the Chicago Bears with the rookies reporting today. And just within the last few hours here, Caleb Williams, Roma Dunze, their two first-round picks, their two top 10 picks, have agreed to terms, have inked their contracts, and so now they will be here for all the legitimate work that the Bears will be doing on the practice field, in the meeting rooms, in the preseason games. They will have them as fully varnished members of the team. But we transition here at the top of the third hour because the Cubs are at the All-Star break, just like the rest of Major League Baseball. They got Showtime out there waiting his turn, his opportunity to pitch in the MLB All-Star game. Shota Imanaga. So we'll see. If it happens during the show here, we'll certainly update you on anything that we see from Showtime. But moving from Showtime, let's go out to the hotline. Joining us on the Circa Resort and Casino hotline is Megan Montemurro, Cubs beat reporter for the Chicago Tribune. CircaLasVegas.com is where you can get all the information on Circa. And you can find Megan on social at M_Montemurro. Megan, what's happening this evening? How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Outstanding. Appreciate you joining me here. And the idea of the Cubs really solidifying themselves as buyers, it felt fun, and it really felt like they were on the cusp of that when they were in the midst of the five-game win streak, and they had won 7 games out of 8, and they're in St. Louis, and they got the doubleheader coming up. It's like, all right, you can just put this stamp, put your foot on the throats of the Cardinals, and just make this thing an easy decision. And I don't know. You drop the doubleheader. Nice response with that 8-3 victory the following day. But is the door still ajar as you see it? Is there still a world where maybe the Cubs end up being sellers?
I mean, the tricky thing with that, I mean, the entire time was just the way their roster is constructed is it's not that easy to sell necessarily. I mean, one of their most notable potential trade pieces would be Cody Bellinger, but between fracturing the finger and then his contract is complicated, he has 2 player options for the following 2 seasons. So, you know, I'm sure teams acquiring him might have viewed him as a rental because he could opt out at the end of the year. The Cubs, if you're wanting to get more of a haul back, could say you're getting, you know, a really good hitter for potentially 3 years. So that complicates things. You have guys with no trade clauses like Ian Happ, say it's Suzuki, or partial ones like Jameson Taillon. So it's not a very easy way to break apart the team, at least at the trade deadline. Like maybe if they don't make the postseason again, you know, I think the front office certainly has to make some tough decisions and really evaluate the roster, because that would be 2 straight years of falling short with the team on paper that looked good enough. So I think if they're going to do anything that both maybe satisfies moving pieces, but also bringing in players that might have some team control. So, you know, I could see a balance in that avenue, but I think it could be really hard to really trade a lot of players, especially where you look at where they're at. I mean, their rotation has been really good. I mean, you look at their top 3 starters, what they did in Baltimore against one of the best lineups in baseball, and they swept them, only allowed 2 runs the whole series. So there's a lot to like still. And so now the front office has to determine, like, okay, if we add, how do we attack that?
How different does the Cubs were at, it wasn't exactly at the All-Star break, but just after the All-Star break last year, they got to a 47-51 record. So 98 games in the last season, they had the exact same record they have 98 games into this season. But comparing All-Star break to All-Star break last season to this, does it feel very similar? And if it's different, how different does the performance of the team feel in comparing the two?
I mean, I think one difference is at that point, you know, they still had a lot of their key pieces. Like right now, you look at their bullpen, I mean, they don't have two of the guys that were going to be high leverage arms in Adbert Alzolay and Julian Merriweather. Now, Merriweather should be back relatively soon. Last update over the weekend was that, you know, he probably will be going back on rehab assignment after throwing in Arizona during this break. But he should be back soon. Adbert is going to be a little bit longer, not expected back until August. But, like, those are two high-leverage arms that they were counting on that they didn't have. Whereas you look at last year, you know, part of the problem when they got into September is they rode the bullpen, their top arms, so heavily. They played their starting lineup every day so heavily that they just got worn down by the end of the year. Whereas you look at this version, you know, a lot of the key guys have stayed healthy, especially on the hitting side. I know Bellinger's kind of an exception right now, but, you know, they're going to be gaining some guys back who should help for the stretch run and should be fresh. And so I think that's part of the difference. And I think, again, it comes back to the rotation. I mean, they've been so good when you look at that top three of, you know, Justin Steele, Shota Imanaga, Jameson Taillon. Like, they've been so steady this year. And when you have three guys that you feel confident, you know, you're winning the day they're on the mound, like, I think that really goes far. And now the key is obviously the offense. Like, there's been signs over the past week that things have started going their way. And that's really going to be ultimately, I think, the difference.
And so in kind of following your logic here with the difficulty that there would be just for some sort of a massive sell-off, I hear what you're saying with that. So then, the calculus for the front office, does it really come down to more so a decision between either largely standing pat or becoming buyers if some sort of a sell-off doesn't necessarily seem like something that would be that easy to execute?
Yeah, and I mean, and I think the way you do that too is because, I mean, I think it would be very hard to make this kind of trade in season, but you look at the Michael Busch deal, like that's a really good example of the kinds of moves they should be trying to make, where you're getting a guy who's blocked in another organization, doesn't have a path forward. You know, the Cubs can use their capital that they have within the farm system. And obviously there's not a ton of avenues for playing time transition players, but, you know, they need more production from third base with just, you know, Christopher Morel's mix of unluckiness. And now he's been kind of in a little bit of a funk lately. And then obviously they just haven't been getting enough collectively out of the catcher position. And so if you're wanting to bolster the lineup, you know, maybe that's the way you look to try and do that. So, I mean, it's definitely not going to be an easy task because there isn't really clear cut paths. They're going to have some challenging mixing and matching to potentially do.
And as they do it, then they'll be trying to, of course, put themselves in a position to compete for the wild card, for, you know, the division. It just feels like it's such a long road to get back into the divisional picture. And I was mentioning earlier, Megan, that's what I find surprising as much as anything here. It's not that as we got through the offseason and so many folks were talking about the desire for the Cubs to do more with adding power and to do more with the bullpen. My contention at the time was, it's not that necessary yet. They can get to the trade deadline without anybody in this division running away from them. And then here come Milwaukee and St. Louis. And Milwaukee certainly looks like they're ready to run away from folks. And that just caught me off guard. Does either end of this, do you find more surprising the way the division has been better and deeper than many anticipated? Or do you view it more so as the Cubs not necessarily performing to the level that they were anticipated?
Yeah, I'm not necessarily surprised by how the division overall has played out. I mean, you look at the Reds, I mean, the Pirates, those two teams in particular have a lot of young talent that either came up, you know, in the second half last year or, you know, have impacted the team with call-ups in the first half. You know, the Cardinals, I think maybe would be the surprise of the group just because, you know, they, with the pitching, starting pitching they invested in was a little bit on the older side. But they obviously have been playing well. Yeah, I do think, like, it falls more that the Cubs should not be 8.5 games back of Milwaukee right now. I think that's the bigger concern. And look, like, I mean, whether it was been Jed Hoyer, Craig Counsell, players, like all of them said, like, you know, slumps are expected to happen over the course of the season. It's just how prolonged it was on the offensive side. Just obviously was a crusher. And now, again, they're in the same position as last year of they have to figure out a way to dig back out of it. You know, the division, it doesn't seem ideal. They only have one more series against the Brewers for the rest of the season. So that will make them hard to chase down. And, you know, in the wild card, they obviously have a lot of teams to leapfrog. They're behind five other teams that are chasing the Mets right now for the last wild card spot. And of those teams, they've already lost some of the season tiebreakers to them. So that means not only do they have to, like, catch them, but they have to finish a game ahead of quite a few teams already. So it's definitely, they're definitely creating a tough challenge for themselves.
In evaluating the Cubs on the whole, continue my conversation with Megan Montemurro of the Chicago Tribune. You can find her on Twitter at @M_Montemurro. As I look at the starting pitching, they have been a revelation for the Cubs throughout the majority of the first half here. Other areas that were anticipated to be strengths would include the defense. That's performed below par here. And that to me has been the most surprising aspect. Like, yeah, some of the offensive struggles, a lack of power. They could have predicted some of that coming. But out of anything that I found most surprising, say on the positive side, maybe a pleasant surprise by how dominant the starting staff has been. On the negative side, though, I find it even more surprising that the defense hasn't been as elite as it seems like this roster, this organization and what they compiled should have been elite on defense. Where, in just evaluating the various elements and aspects of the Cubs through the All-Star break, what has surprised you more, either on the positive or the negative end?
I mean, when it comes to the defense, I mean, they definitely collectively got off to a really rough start. I would say probably those first six-ish weeks, they definitely were collectively underperforming, not making plays that they were capable of making. But I will say over the last 2 weeks, they've definitely, I think, stepped it up to the level that was expected of them. I mean, I think Dansby's play defensively has really been back to where it was last year since coming back from the knee issue. I mean, obviously, Pete Carr-Armstrong in center field is a clear difference maker. Ian Happ and Seiya Suzuki have made some nice outfield assists. I mean, the Cubs had five outfield assists in their weekend series in St. Louis, which was the most by a team this season in one series. And so, like, there's a lot to like. Michael Busch has looked incredible at first base lately and has clearly improved since spring training. So I will say that, like, the defense has definitely improved. And honestly, you know, a big reason that they won the game Sunday, like, Jameson Taillon talked about that post game that, you know, he didn't have his best stuff. And he generally is going to give up some contact in his outings, and they made quite a few plays behind him. So I do think it's encouraging that the defense is getting to that level that was expected of them coming in. I think, like, the biggest surprise for me is just, like, you know, how long the offense has struggled collectively. You finally have some guys going on heaters. Ian Happ, obviously, Michael Busch has looked really good. They really need to find a way to get Christopher Morel going. I know, you know, some of the advanced metrics indicated for a good chunk of the first half that he was just being extremely unlucky, like basically one of the unluckiest players in the majors. But I would say probably the last couple weeks, it's not been quite to that level. And so they really just need more production there. They can't have a black hole in the bottom third of the lineup. And so, you know, PCA having his best day as a big leaguer on Sunday was encouraging. Miguel Amaya, the adjustments he's made has made him look better the last couple games. So they really need to roll that coming out of the break.
So for Jed and Carter, then, what do you see as an area that's most likely for an upcoming transaction? Then, if they are going to acquire some additional help, are you thinking pen? Are you thinking power? What's available that you think they might try to go get?
Yeah, I mean, I think bullpen, you if you're a team like looking to make that push, you need to add some support there, especially I think some more veteran experience, just because, I mean, look at what happened you know, the second half last year. I mean, they just by the end of the year were worn down, and it definitely cannot hurt to add to that area. I do think if you can find a bat or like a platoon kind, that obviously could be helpful. Again, the question is, where would you play them with, you know, Suzuki, Morrell have been both splitting time at, for stretches at DH, depending on how Council optimizes defense. So that might be tougher. But I think if, like, positionally you're thinking, like, third base catcher with an offensive profile, if there's something that they can add there, that would seem to be the best path forward.
And with Shota Imanaga ready to make his MLB All-Star debut, I'm curious for just your thoughts on the first portion, the first segment, the pre-All-Star break performance he's had so far this season. I mean, there was a lot of talk about, you know, third, fourth, fifth starter and, you know, limits of innings and these types of things. And, I mean, he's put together just a remarkable performance beyond what most folks were able to expect.
Yeah, I think it's been really impressive. And, I mean, I think part of it is I know he gets the rookie designation since he hasn't pitched in the majors before. But, I mean, he comes with a lot of experience from Japan. And so I think you see that in the way that he's able to make adjustments and the way he's learning the league. I think, like, a big thing was when, you know, the Mets shelled him at Wrigley. You know, he talked about how he was trying to conserve some fastball velocity so he could go deep into the game. And basically how he learned from that. And then you watched him the next time out and yeah, his velo numbers were back to where they, had been before in the first and second, third innings. And so I think you just see how he's able to apply things so quickly. And I think one of the impressive things is like, he really hasn't needed to break out his full pitch mix all that often. Like, he's predominantly been four-seam fastball, split finger, but he can throw a sweeper, he can throw a curveball, he can work in a cutter, but he really hasn't needed to that much. So I think it's going to be interesting to see over these next, you know, 2.5 months what that dynamic looks like in terms of how he attacks hitters and how they continue to try to adjust to him.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot to look forward to. I mean, I didn't know much, if anything, about his personality, but just seeing that the showmanship that's been there as well, and just the joy, the exuberance that he pitches with and competes with has been a lot of fun to watch. I can't wait. Assuming we got some more games of leverage coming up after the All-Star break for the Cubs, looking forward to watching him out there. Always look forward to talking to you, Megan. Appreciate you taking the time to join me tonight.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
This is Megan Montemuro of the Chicago Tribune. You can find her on the X at M_Montemuro. And we'll transition back to some Bears conversation because apparently we had a bunch of folks starting to call up the hotline at 312-644-6767 wanting to talk about the Bears. But just one final note with the Cubs. I love the point that Megan makes there about some of the difficulties that the Cubs would have in trying to unload some of the players with no trade clauses and health concerns and the like. So I think that even enhances the difficulty of the decision then, because it's a bit of a purgatory that the Cubs find themselves in that regard, because you could stand pat, but what does that really do for you? I mean, I guess if you do nothing, you just hope that these players who, you know, haven't necessarily produced as consistently as you might like, then you get the most out of them in the second half of the season here. And part of the approach that Craig Council has taken has been to try and save a few of the arms and perhaps be a little bit conservative in you know, not rushing guys back from injury and things like that. So, you know, it's a roster that's been assembled here that you could hope they will just improve and put themselves in the in the wild card conversation and keep themselves there and maybe try to, you know, overtake some folks for the wild card. Or do you really try to actually make a more significant move? It doesn't necessarily seem like some huge swing is coming for the Cubs. This doesn't necessarily feel like the year for that. But we'll watch it closely and see how that part plays out. But 312-644-6767 is the number to give me a call. I know a lot of you were starting to call in as we were talking Cubs, wanting to talk about the Bears. So go ahead. You can hit me back. We can transition back to the Bears conversation as number one overall pick in the NFL draft, Caleb Williams has signed his deal with the Chicago Bears. And the number nine pick that the Bears drafted out of the University of Washington, Rome Odunze, his deal is done as well. So with the rookies in-house and vets on the way later this week, understandable excitement about having this talented squad intact for Ryan Poles. We'll transition back to some Bears conversation. I was talking to Alex a bit earlier about the dogs on this Bears roster. We'll get into that next on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Anthony Herron on 670 The Score.
Make sure you tune in Thursday morning from 5:30 to 10 a.m. as Mully and Haw do their show in front of a live studio audience at the Blue Cross Blue Shield Performance Stage. They'll be joined by Olin Krutz, Dave Wannstedt, and other special guests on site on the eve of training camp. It's all brought to you by Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois through it all. And Schmaltz Deli, spreading deli goodness everywhere. I am Anthony Herron. This is Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Bears got their rookies done, all those deals, those contracts taken care of. Caleb and Rome have now agreed to terms. So no more concerns, no more consternation, no reason to have any ill will, any negative feelings or thoughts, at least for one night only, just for this evening. Allow yourself to bask in the tasty goodness that is hope with the Chicago Bears, because it can be difficult to come by hope this time of year with the way things have gone from a baseball perspective on each side of town, the north and south sides, from a basketball perspective over at the UC. Hey, even how recent years have gone for the most part. And you kind of had the one seminal figure in Justin Fields that just gave you some glimpses of greatness, some inklings of hope for what he could mean in this franchise moving forward. But those hopes were dashed. They moved on from Justin Fields. But there's a legit roster intact. And folks, go ahead and allow yourself. You know, you don't necessarily got to get outside yourselves and start thinking Super Bowl champions or anything like that. But give yourself a night just to enjoy it, just to bask in that hope, bask in that glow. And then, like I always tell people when they're preparing to get married, distress is worthwhile. Everything you do leading up to that marriage, planning the ceremony, going through the guest list and the seating arrangements and the flowers and the place settings and everything else that you do when you're preparing to get married. But all my friends, all my contacts, everybody who gets married, me and my wife have been married for a long time. So I've been able to speak as kind of the old wise married guy for quite a few years. We got married pretty young. But in the end, the way I always advise folks, all the stress leading into the wedding is worthwhile. Once you get to that rehearsal dinner, once you get to the wedding day itself, there are going to be things that go wrong. Don't stress about it at that point. You can't do anything about it. Just enjoy the ride, enjoy your day, enjoy your weekend. But now leading into it, go ahead and allow yourself to stress. This is kind of the inverse of that. Allow yourself this one night to be stress-free. Then go ahead and get back in all the worries, all the talk about the center position, all the talk about the lack of depth on the offensive line, the limits to the pass rush, all the worry about not having a backup quarterback and having a rookie starting with all the pressure that's associated with the Bears. Do that tomorrow. For tonight, let's go ahead and allow yourself to soak this in, to be in a good mood, in a good place about the Bears and the hope that is associated with their upcoming fortunes for this season. 312-644-6767. One topic that we were talking about a bit earlier in the show, and part of it was really because we had one of the callers we had earlier in the show brought up, I guess, a catchphrase, if you will, from a high school coach up in Brookfield who apparently used to tell his son, I think it was Joe in Westmont, said his son had a high school coach in Brookfield that used to have a little phrase that he would say that essentially went something like this. If you don't have animals, you don't have a zoo, I think is what was said earlier, if I'm remembering that correctly.
That was the direct quote.
Okay, good. Yeah, I was not familiar with that turn of phrase, and I feel like I know a decent amount of phrases and words and what have you. Wasn't necessarily familiar with that one, but the point he was attempting to make, I think, not completely successfully, but I think the point he was attempting to make there was basically you need some dogs on the football team. And the Chicago sports scene does have some dogs on it. The Chicago Bears have a few dogs on the roster right now. They got some talent on this roster that can be leaned into, that confidence can be had in. And so that's part of what I want to talk about in this segment here. Just who are the quintessential dogs on this football team? Who are the ones that you know you want to go to battle with, and they're going to bring it when it's time for them to go out there and strap it up? So I know, Alex, you said you had a couple of thoughts on who these individuals would be if we were going to talk about the dogs on this Bears football team. Who would be a couple of your submissions?
There's actually quite a few of them, but let's just start.
You can't list the whole roster.
No.
You got to narrow this thing down.
First, I want to get your thoughts on, like, what are the traits you're looking for?
To me, when I'm talking about somebody who's a dog, it essentially comes down to when you're taking the football field, somebody that you know will show up ready to compete at a high level, somebody who will show up with no fear, somebody who's willing to show out in any environment, somebody who is going to go out there and be that engine for you, that tempo setter, that pistol starter, if you will, the person who, when they go out there, whether they are the biggest, the fastest, they know this. They're going to be the meanest SOB that steps onto the field. So when you got that dog in you, it's, are you consistently ready to compete at a fever pitch? That's kind of what I'm looking for when I'm describing a dog.
So let's start with two guys that you hear on the score during the football season, okay, and two guys in the secondary, and Jaquan Brisker and Jalen Johnson.
All right.
Well, Jaquan Brisker
in the secondary. Okay.
Yeah, Jaquan Brisker, because look, I know that to play football you have to like to hit, but then there's that that player that you watch and you're like, this guy likes to hit a little bit too much. And that would be Jaquan Brisker. I mean, just the reckless abandon that he plays with week in and week out. And then Jalen Johnson, from a professional standpoint, like a guy that has clearly worked very hard at his craft, is very in control of his game, and is continuing to get better and better year after year. And like you said, you know, every Sunday he's going to show up ready to compete.
Yeah, I think those are some good submissions right there, and especially the fact that you went secondary for each of them, because it's not only about someone who's an excellent player or playmaker, but I really like the way you kind of honed in on the competitive juices, the focus. Like, you think about Jalen Johnson, the level of focus it takes for Jalen Johnson to be prepared, because there, throughout his young football career, he's still, like, this last season was really the first time you saw a number of opponents begin to show a willingness to even throw at Jalen Johnson. But then part of that is because the secondary as a whole began to step their game up. So it wasn't as easy just to say, we're going to throw away from that guy, because the DBs as a group were performing at a much higher level. So that focus that it takes, you know, is one thing to be a dog when it comes down to the physicality of Jaquan Brisker, but then also factoring in Jalen Johnson, that kind of being locked in, ready to compete, focused game after game, even if he goes series after series, quarter after quarter, half after half at times, without seeing passes coming his way. But when they do throw the ball at him, he's always shown a locked-in ability to be ready for. So there's a lot of respect that comes with that. And I think the mental focus and the fortitude it takes to be a dog, that shows up a lot in Jalen Johnson. A player I would highlight for the dog that's in them, and this is an individual who, you know, you think of big-time playmakers with the football in their hands, you think about wide receivers who do amazing things, and DJ Moore certainly comes to mind in that regard. But it's not just, to me, after he gets the football and is running away from people that shows up most. But I was talking about the mental aspect of being a dog, how for a wide receiver, he's not a guy who's got a lot of diva to him. He's ready to do the grunt work and the dirty work. He'll go out there and block for his teammates, and he will run the full route tree. And he has gotten better every year that he's been in the National Football League, where in some ways he's built like an old school running back at 5'11", 210 plus, this durable physical sort of frame that's there with him. But same kind of aspect of the focus that it takes, though, because he'll go a number of series or quarters without seeing the football. And then in some of those games where maybe there were just few opportunities to get it, he always found a way to make a play. And that competitive fire that was in DJ Moore, even though he's not this bombastic personality, you could tell by the actions on the football field, by the way he competed as a player, how much dog he's got in him. 312-644-6767 is the phone line. Let's go out to the hotline, get some thoughts from some of you out there as well. Tracy is on the south side with some thoughts about what's happening with the Bears. What's up, Tracy?
I love what's happening with the Bears. And you asked for two dogs. I got Komet and DJ Moore. Komet brings the defensively and offensive, and so do DJ Moore.
I agree. I think Cole Komet as a player, you know, because some of the issues, some of the concerns I have with Cole Komet early in his Bears career, the occasional drop that was there, not necessarily the most sudden athlete as a route runner. So you're wondering, okay, as a young player, as a young tight end, where does that development come into play for someone who maybe the Bears will have to depend on? But we've seen season after season where Cole Komet has continued to work at his craft, continued to hone his craft as a tight end, as a blocker, as a route runner. And then last season, really the aspects he added to his game, you saw him begin to make some contested catches, to reach his big long arms away from his frame and snatch the football. Even his defenders were draped all over him at times. And where, to me, he's always been pretty exceptional. When he does actually get the football, his ability to run after catch, he is a big and from a straight line speed perspective, really fast athlete. And a lot of defenders, a lot of DBs do not want to go and lower their shoulder to attempt to make a tackle on Cole Komet. So I like that. That's a good submission as a dog on the Chicago Bears. One more that I'll throw out there is a player who, when he was acquired last offseason, didn't get a whole lot of ballyhoo, but Andrew Billings as an interior defensive lineman, as a defensive tackle, was a fourth-round pick when he came out in the 2016 NFL draft to the Bengals. Had a nice career going in Cincinnati, but fills a very precise, a very specific role with the Bears because it's a defense. And two things I told folks about Matt Eberflus when he took this job. But Matt Eberflus' defense is going to take the football away, and they're going to stop the run. What did they start doing? It didn't go so well in year number one, but what did they start doing last year? They began to stop the run. They began to take the football away. A big reason for their run defense improving so much was the work Andrew Billings was doing inside last season. And that, to me, when you have especially this sort of one-gap defensive philosophy and a lot of bodies flying upfield and folks trying to, you know, sort of, you know, play the run on the way to the quarterback and some of those things that you think of being associated with this scheme, the guy most frequently in positions of physicality, taking on double teams, hitting blocks, is Andrew Billings on the interior of this defensive line. He played at a really, really high level in the middle of that Bears defense, and it's not going to be a position and it's not going to be a style of play that's going to lead itself to a bunch of sacks and tackles for loss. But I just want Andrew Billings to know, I see you, Andrew. I saw the performance you had last season, the key cog in that Bears run defense that did big things and allowed them to be one of the better run defenses in football was that dog they got in the middle, Andrew Billings. No doubt about that. So that's my submission. We heard from Alex Kuhn, heard from some callers at 312-644-6767. I do have one other sort of concept that occurred to me here just in relation to a couple of star players. And this will still sort of keep the football conversation rolling here. But there was a recent contract signed by an NBA player, an NBA star who really had a star turn in postseason play, who got big money but didn't get quite as much money as really he could have if he went for it. And it reminded me of a situation, one of these dogs that we were just talking about a moment ago with the Bears. I'll tell you exactly what I mean. We'll do that next. I'm Anthony Herron. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670.
I mean, Brunson's a great player. You know, I've always, and again, I coached him. He's still mad at me that I didn't start him with the USA team, but I've been around him. Obviously, I know Rick real well. He's a great player.
Anthony Herron on 670 The Score.
Jalen Brunson, the guard from New York Knicks, had a magnificent regular season career year for him and was the key cog for the Knicks throughout the playoff run that they made under Tom Thibodeau's leadership as well. And so because he's with the Knicks and because there's so much surrounding the expectations with that franchise in the NBA, Then it was a star turn for Jalen Brunson. A lot of folks were paying attention to what he was doing during the NBA playoffs, and he did big things, big moments, big game-winning shots. And so the anticipation was that he was setting himself up to ink one of these lucrative max contracts with just the eye-popping numbers that we tend to see thrown around the National Basketball Association. So Jalen Brunson ended up doing the surprising thing, because he could have, if he would have so chosen to do so, he could have waited one more year. He had a player option for 2025-2026, and he decided, as opposed to waiting another year and having the ability to sign for additional money, because he was entering the third year of a four-year contract that he signed with the Knicks before 2022, but he decided to go ahead and do an extension right now. So in the immediate aspect of it, he's reportedly leaving over $100 million on the table with this new deal that he's signing. And so that in turn gives the New York Knicks, over the course of the next 4 years with the contract that he signed here, gives them some flexibility with the salary cap and the ability to keep the roster flush with talent, to keep them a contender in the East, because it would have been less likely if he would have taken, you know, waited a year and then taken kind of the supermax that would have been available to him, then it would have likely been more difficult. So the deal he signed right now, 4 years, $156.5 million. That's the extension that he signed with the Knicks. And it's going to be plenty of money. It's not going to be a whole lot of complaints. At least there shouldn't be a whole lot of complaints about keeping the lights on or anything. And, you know, a lot of you folks who dealt with storms the last couple of nights in and around the Chicagoland area, keeping the lights on can be out of your control regardless of whether or not you've paid your bills or not. But up till now, you know, he's going to make about $25 million this coming season. Now he's going to make upwards of $35 to $40 million over the next few years. But one thing that should be paid attention to, though, in the decision that Jalen Brunson made at the time, that he will now, in signing this four-year extension now as opposed to waiting a year, he'll actually get to free agency a year earlier. So by the time he's played his 10th season in the NBA, and this current extension that he did will take him through the 2027-2028 season, and the advantage of that is that that will be his 10th season in the NBA. And after a player has played 10 seasons in the NBA, he becomes eligible for the highest possible max contract. So that starts at 35% of the salary cap. NBA salary cap just keeps going up, just like the NFL salary cap keeps going up. And so what Jalen Brunson has actually done is put himself in position to hit year 10 of his NBA career earlier at the age of 32 in 2028. And so that rise in the salary cap that will reportedly be expected to be another 10% higher by then than it is now. And so it's projected that he may be in line for a deal of over $200 million at that point, and maybe another five-year contract at the age of 32. So if he keeps a quality level of play going, he's actually set himself up financially to do some really big things. The reason I bring up Jalen Brunson is because his contract he just did with the New York Knicks actually reminds me of the contract Jalen Johnson just did with the Chicago Bears. He was a second-round pick, showed himself very quickly as one of the top corners in football year after year. He began getting embroiled in a pretty public contract dispute with the Bears. They eventually got a deal done. The Bears had to franchise tag him initially because they hadn't agreed to terms yet. Then, just a couple of days later, they were able to agree to terms. The contract that Jalen Johnson did, a four-year deal, contract extension, $76 million, $54 million of that guaranteed. So some of the conjecture that was there is that maybe Jalen Johnson was going to become the top paid corner in football, because coming into the season, the thought was he hadn't quite performed at that level to be paid as to reset the corner market. But then the Pro Bowl and all pro season that he just put together, the thought was, oh, you know, price of the bricks going up. Maybe that's the type of performance and the type of contract that Jalen Johnson would now be looking for. But what he actually ended up doing, he didn't end up resetting the corner market. He didn't become the highest paid corner in football, but the $43.8 million guaranteed in his deal at 57.5% of Johnson's contract, that's actually now the highest amount of guaranteed money out of any corner in football. And so while the total value of the deal didn't reset the corner market, but that aspect of how much of the money was guaranteed actually did put him in the top spot. That $43.8 million in guarantees, that eclipses $43.7 that Jalen Ramsey got, and it'll also get Jalen Johnson to free agency again at 28 years old. So he's going to be in line for another huge contract, probably even bigger if he continues to play like Jalen Johnson over the next few years. This four-year deal, he'll be 28 and be able to perhaps at that point even reset the corner market. So those two contracts really reminded me a lot of each other with the way that, yes, on surface, seem a bit team-friendly, but actually get the player to the big money yet again, get him that other bite at the apple. I thought it was really well done in both cases. I feel like this show hadn't been half bad either. Fairly well done. Excellent work by Alex Kuhn. Really appreciations for all of you out there. Thank the guests who joined me on the show, Carmen Vitale, Ken Davis, and Megan Montemuro. Appreciations and salutations to all of you for listening in. I am Anthony Herron. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.